You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
Welcome to the Crespo Show.
Bonus episode time. How's it going? Welcome to Cinema Crespediso. I'm your host, Chris Crespo, hanging out with Juicy Gogrin. Drew, how's it going?
Dude.
And we're talking about The Hateful Eight. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie yet, we are talking about the movie and everything that happened in it. So this is your chance to get out right now. Otherwise, spoilers. Here we go. Quentin Tarantino, eighth movie, Hateful Eight. Drew.
Chris.
What'd you think of it?
It was good.
Yeah, it was good.
It was really good.
Yeah.
I don't know how it would transfer over to, you know, like the regular version, but...
Oh, without the overture and intermission?
Without the overture and intermission,
because... It did make it more of a cinematic experience as opposed to just seeing a movie.
And it broke it down into two parts, you know?
Chapters 1 through 3 and then chapters
exactly.
4. Yeah.
You know, chapters mm-hmm. 1, 2, and 3...
It's all set up.
It's all set up.
Very
you know,
talky.
It's very talky. You learn why everybody is so hateful.
And then ends on a moment of violence.
How they all know each other...
By the time Samuel Jackson shoots Bruce Dern, you're like, man, where's the violence in this movie?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like, what the hell? I mean,
and then finally he shoots him. He's like, oh,
I mean,
okay,
yeah, you know, the chick, the Domergue, she gets the shit beat out of her throughout the movie.
That's true. That is true.
And that's pretty, I mean, within, you know, the first couple seconds of you seeing, you know, her with Mr. Douglas.
Mr. Russell.
Mr. Russell. Damn it. Too many Kirks. he elbows her in the face like three times.
Yeah, she gets beat up a lot. Which, one of the reasons why I wanted to do a bonus episode, a spoiler episode, is because we can get into details, but there are a couple things that I want to address, that I want to talk about, and I want to talk it out. Because I tried to get into it in my review, but again, my written review is spoiler-free.
Yes.
I try to do that when movies first come out.
Spoiler-free Sunday.
Yeah, so, she gets beat up so much in this movie by a bunch of by men.
Yeah.
She's the only woman in the movie. No.
Correct.
Not including there's that one stuff. The chapter 4 is the flashback.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it chapter 4? I think so.
Chapter Whatever.
We learn about Jody's gang.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You find out the setup behind it all.
So, but she's of the main characters, the only woman.
The only
in the
woman,
bunch,
yeah.
Getting she's handcuffed too. She's in chains, mm-hmm. so she can't defend herself. Getting beat the fuck up, punched, threatened with violence, and then violence gets done. Even knock out her teeth at one point. What doesn't happen? Does she get shot in the foot?
She gets shot in the foot.
Puked blood on, and then
and then
her brother's brains blown out
on her.
Onto her.
And then finally hung.
Hung in a very gruesome way.
Yeah, like
not a quick hanging.
Not a snap of the neck, more of the there's a rope around your neck and you're suffocating.
And you're suffocating. Terrible way to go. And because of this, there are those out there who have called this into question, saying it maybe it's misogynistic. Not even maybe. A lot of people are saying this is misogyny because of the way there's a woman in this movie and she just gets beat up the whole time. And,
well,
and by the end of the movie, everyone in the room is calling her a bitch. Everyone that's left anyway.
This will have been the second time where Quentin Tarantino mm-hmm. is staying historically accurate.
Okay. That's one of the ways I'm looking at it.
I mean,
historically
yeah.
accurate. That's women are still treated to this day like that.
Well, yes, but not to such, you know, an overt and in public extent.
Mm-hmm. Depends on the country, I guess.
No, yeah, exactly.
That's true. Not happened here in Orlando like that.
But, you know, in the West, in America, I mean,
that's how women were treated.
For all intents and purposes, women were property.
Yeah.
So, you know,
which sucks.
Yeah.
But Daisy wasn't no one's property, though. I mean, she was a bounty. But Daisy is a...
Well, she was an outlaw, though, too.
She's an outlaw. She's an accused murderer. We can mm-hmm. assume she murdered.
Oh, yeah,
She's a pretty terrible person.
Yeah, yeah. There were everybody in that movie was fucking awful.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Here's the other thing that I'm thinking. Daisy Domergue is a horrible person. One of the first things out of her mouth is calling Major Warren the N-word. I was going to say the N-word.
They said it a lot.
That's the second thing I'm going to say. So... She's a racist, she's a horrible person, probably a murderer, a liar, whatever terrible qualities mm-hmm. you can attribute to an outlaw all the time. It's Daisy Domergue is it.
Mm-hmm.
She's a villain, all right? So doesn't that come into it? She's a terrible person. Should we feel sympathy for this person who she's getting beat up and hit and spit on because she's got a she's sassing to everyone. She's talking shit. Mm-hmm. She's calling people names. She spit on the supposed Abraham Lincoln letter.
I mean, she has a bounty on her head.
She's got a bounty, $10,000 bounty on her head. Then we find out she's the second in command of a ruthless gang. All of them have bounties on their head. And then when Jody dies, she's like, I'm in charge, ain't it, boys?
Channing Tatum.
Yeah, Channing Tatum. And then when he dies, she's like, I'm in charge now, right? And everyone's mm-hmm. like,
yeah.
Immediately, like, yep, yes, you are.
Yeah, exactly.
You're in charge of this murderous gang.
Mm-hmm.
She, because of her and them trying to get her out, she directly or indirectly caused the deaths of
everybody.
Every single character in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Without fail.
Yes.
Okay. So then should she be getting a pass? Should they still be transporting her all cool? Like, oh, we know you're a horrible person. But no, we're not going to lay a finger on you just because you're a woman? Is that to be expected?
No, definitely right?
That doesn't make any sense. If she was a man getting beat up the whole time, people like, that's what he deserves.
Yeah.
That's he's getting the treatment he deserves. But you make the character, you change the character's genitalia.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, people are calling that treatment of that character into question. Which is like, I don't know. It's like people, I don't think those people are thinking through. I think they're seeing surface details. They're seeing Jennifer Jason Leigh getting
beat
the
shit beat out of her.
As opposed to
this horrible human being that may or may, you know,
who's getting what she deserved.
Exactly. Just because she's got a pair of tits and a hole between her legs.
Yeah. Doesn't mean.
I mean, I thought we were all supposed to be equal here, right?
See, now that's another thing that I've been thinking about for a long time. A quick tangent on that. You know, I'm a feminist, because a feminist just means I believe in equality for everyone, regardless of gender.
Uh-huh.
You know, all these labels that we put on ourselves have just been constructed to compartmentalize us and keep us separate as a society, and so we can argue over
nonsense,
straight, gay, black, white, all these stupid labels. Why is the world so binary? It's not. It's stupid. So. You know, that's where I'm coming from with this particular thought. For years, I guess the women's lib movement, like in America, started in earnest. I think it's considered the late '60s with the hippie movement in the '70s,
mm-hmm.
the bra burning and all that stuff. That's when, like, I mean, obviously you got the suffragette movement of the '20s and shit, but it feels like feminism in terms of equality, gender equality, started really in the '70s. Right? So while We're fighting for this. We're fighting for equality, regardless of your gender. At the same time, people complain about, you hear the old thing about how chivalry is dead.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, I mean, come on. You want gender equality here? That's unfortunately one of the byproducts.
Do you want gender equality, or do you want the same people? Because there are people who will do that. Who'll be like, we should be equal. I'm a woman, you know, or whatever. But then, oh, people don't hold doors open for me anymore, or.
Well, I'm a dude. I don't think, I mean, you know, outside of walking right behind somebody into a building, I don't think the door has been, quote unquote, held open for me ever in my life.
Ever, right? And then, you know what? I hold doors open for people all the time.
All the time.
It doesn't matter if it's a woman, dude, young, old.
No, it makes no difference.
Like, I get to a door and there's someone behind me. I'm like, oh, here you go.
Yeah, there you go, sir.
It just feels like a nice thing to do.
Ma'am.
I feel like human decency.
Grandma.
I feel like if we were treating each other as equals.
Hot chick.
And we were also.
Ugly chick.
I'm trying to get this thought. If we, because I feel like this is a good thought.
Get it out.
I'm trying to get out. Like, this is new great philosopher shit. I feel like if we treated people as equals and also treated people as we wanted to be treated, which is well,
mm-hmm.
Then chivalry wouldn't even matter. Well, people will just be chivalrous to each other no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's the way to do it.
But that's not the way it is.
No, it's not the way it
is. And,
it's,
I mean,
tradition is hard to break.
Yeah, they say.
Years and years of programming.
I mean, they do say chivalry is dead, but, you know, on one hand, if you want to be treated like a lady, fucking act like one.
Well, that's another thing entirely. At the same time, you should be telling all these boys out there start acting like men. But they're not. A bunch of goddamn boys.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's where I'm going with all that. So, with that mindset, Daisy Domergue is a horrible person regardless of her gender. So, correct. Her getting beat up...
It shouldn't matter.
I don't think it helps that they use... the B word, bitch. Mm-hmm. They refer to it as a bitch a lot, which is a gender specific and, you know, can be easily misogynist term. Mm-hmm. Can also not be misogynist term. You know, if like in sports, one dude's calling another dude like, I just made you my bitch. That's not really, that's not, I mean, could it be that? Because you're saying,
it kind of is.
You're saying you're so shitty, you might as well be a woman.
Yes.
Yeah, that's still misogynist.
And,
so
bitch is misogynist. And not even so much that you might as well be a woman, but you might as well be a woman and me as a man will dominate you.
Dominating you. Yeah, sure. Okay, there you go. So, yeah, it's a terrible term in that regard. And they use it a lot towards her. But that ties in to the use of the N-word. Mm-hmm. I don't even like saying nigger. That was hard for me to say right there. I hated it. I hate saying it.
I know and tell so many racist jokes. It's, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you're just a horrible person, though.
Mm-hmm.
We've discussed this on the show.
Yes.
Plenty of times.
Terrible on the inside.
Terrible. Pretty rotten to the core.
Mm-hmm.
So now, because of this coming on the heels of Django Unchained, copious amounts of the use of that word.
Yes.
And people are like openly being like, you know, we should be questioning Tarantino's use of this terminology.
Well,
especially
again,
to the degree that he uses it.
Historical accuracy.
That's what I'm thinking with these two movies. But it's not to say that there isn't a precedent for him using the N-word in his movies.
Oh.
And most likely more inappropriately. In Pulp Fiction, when he plays Jimmy and, yeah, you know, he's talking to Jules, a black person, and he's like talking about the dead nigger storage and all, yeah, that shit, and saying that over and over and over. And but then it's revealed that he's talking about his wife Bonnie. Bonnie is black.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm thinking about this, right? Tarantino, especially at that time, I'm sure still now, because he's this type of dude, he sees that as, oh, Jimmy's married to a black chick. That means he loves black people. Mm-hmm. He can't possibly be racist. So it's like he married into the club. He should be able to allow to use the N-word, you know?
Well, yeah, it's like homeboy converting for the jokes.
Yeah, the Jewish guy converting, yeah, for the joke, so he could talk shit. Yes, exactly. It's like, well, I can't be hateful against Jewish people. I am Jewish. I married into it. So,
oh, you totally can be.
So, I don't know, exactly, yeah. So, and that's the thing. People are like, no, Tarantino, this is still racist as fuck. Like, you shouldn't be doing that.
Well, Sign of the Times.
Right, it could be, because then even the thing about the stuff that he written at the same time, True Romance, there's the whole Moore's,
oh, yeah,
speech, mm-hmm, you know, which at its essence is a pretty racist thing. In,
well,
the way,
yeah,
that it's,
I mean,
used.
But so that, much so that, I mean, Don Vincenzo is so offended by that he blows the dude's brains out.
But he, yeah, and he's, but then that's the type of thing, especially 90s movies, Italian gangsters. Italian gangsters in general are racist people.
Fucking racist.
That's why, like, all the people and Goodfellas are racist as fuck.
I mean,
that doesn't necessarily mean Scorsese's racist if your characters are racist.
Dude, it's the year 2016 and, like, half this country is still racist as fuck.
Crazy racist as fuck. So, and then something like True Romance, at least then, it's revealing of the character, right, of both characters, mm-hmm, and where they're coming from, because they're both kind of shitty dudes. But then you got something like Reservoir Dogs, where you have, you know, characters are yelling at each other, like Cartel is fighting with Madsen, and then Steve Buscemi's trying to break him up. He's like, hey, what are you trying to act like? You acting like a bunch of niggas?
Yeah.
You know, like, we are, ostensibly saying, we are white people. We handle this the right way. We're not going to act like goddamn animals. That's where he's going with that.
Yeah.
Now, that's revealing the racism of that character and probably the characters around him. But in that situation, like, what does that racism add to it? I mean, dude's a dick, so now he's even more of a dick.
Yeah.
It's not even like there are other black characters in the room, or
character flaw.
It's just a character flaw.
Or maybe
flawed. He's Steve Buscemi in a movie. If you look at Steve Buscemi, you know he's a fucked up
guy. I mean, maybe Quentin Tarantino just likes writing out the word. He likes the way it flows out of his hand.
Which is a weird thing.
So, whatever.
It's a weird thing. It's a weird thing for him to do.
Okay,
but that's one thing. That's those movies.
So he's a genius screenwriter and director, and he might be a little racist.
Yeah, I mean, that's not.
I mean, how many?
It's not. Those things can't be exclusive.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely. And what I'm saying is, with that stuff in the '90s, people questioning that. I love those movies, and I watch them, and whatever. You know, it's Jackie Brown, but then you have, it's actual black characters. That's a black exploitation riff, mm-hmm, totally different. Truth be told, really doesn't bother me all that much. A lot, some of the people it does, and if it does bother them, you know, all power to them. Because it's your own perspective.
Exactly.
But when you're talking about Django and you're talking about the Hateful Eight movie we're talking about now, these are movies that are dealing specifically with racism in America. One of the most racist times in the history of racism.
Yes.
I mean, America perfected a lot of things. Racism was one of them.
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole slavery thing.
The whole slave, owning people and writing into your constitution.
It's cool.
Was it the 3/5 compromise?
Yeah, like, well, every slave is 3/5 of a person.
And like, this is really just for tax purposes anyway. Yeah.
Well, and voting too.
They use it for voting.
Yeah.
Yeah, to help restrict. Which is going on to this day. They're restricted. You hear about how they shut down 30 DMVs in Alabama, all in rural countries,
of course,
in rural areas,
of course,
and in areas that are
poor and black.
Poor and black, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they shut down the DMVs, and then they made their voter laws a little more tougher. Like, you gotta make sure you have yourself your updated ID.
All these people are not gonna be able to go and do that, so they're gonna be disenfranchised and they won't vote. And then nothing will change.
That's at O America. 2016.
Oh yeah, buddy.
So when he's talking about a movie, Django Unchained is pre-Civil War in the South. A movie slaves. He's working with plantation owners, so of course they're gonna be dropping N-word left and right without even thinking about it. Same thing happens in this movie. It's post-Civil War. It's specifically post-Civil War. There's a Union soldier and a Confederate soldier. Yeah. One of them, the Union soldier, is black, just to add on top of it. You know, it's like this movie is so about race relations in this country that it's not even fucking funny. And then for people to then criticize a language in the movie makes no sense, because that would then feel dishonest if you had characters like this that didn't fucking use that shit.
Not only that, but it comes to find that not only do those two characters know each other, but they fought in a battle together.
Baton Rouge.
And also, truth be told, maybe not. Maybe Bruce Dern's son might have had to blow Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, we'll get into that too when we get into some more specifics. I just wanted to, let's finish up the racism thing, because I didn't want to talk about
racism.
But it's talking about the race. The end of the movie, we'll talk about all the stuff happening in the middle. But the end of the movie, the movie ends, just in case you didn't know, that the fucking movie featuring the black Civil War and the white dude just in case you weren't sure that the movie's about race, the movie ends with the black dude and the white dude. a different white dude, but still an equally racist Confederate white dude.
Yes. Both hanging a woman.
Both embraced in their love of each other of hanging a woman. That's how they bonded. And then they're like laying together on the bed, dying, bleeding out. And they have a moment when they read over his fake Abraham Lincoln letter.
Yeah.
And the letter specifically is like, I hope that we will be able to walk hand in hand into the future, into a more positive... Yeah. Blah blah blah, you know, black and
he's
white.
Like,
very specifically, is saying like, this is our positive, this is our hope for future, and they both have a chuckle. Like, yeah, it's pretty good. He's like, yeah, it is good. And they're together. They work together to hang the woman. You know, misogynist. I don't think so. And it's so specifically about how this country is born out of violence. We treat each other horribly for stupid ideological and racist reasons, and yet there could still be hope that even the two people that might hate each other the most could get together, could overcome the differences for a common goal. And then for a better future. In this specific case, yes, to hang a woman. A woman deserved it! Who deserved it? When Kurt Russell started spewing blood out of his mouth.
That was pretty awesome.
I was like, oh. And then she was like,
oh, but this,
when he get to hell, tell him Daisy sent you. She reveled in his death so much.
It was so sad when Obi went, though. Obi got the fucking shaft that entire movie.
Obi did get the shaft. He used collateral damage. Him and Minnie and Sweet Dave.
Yeah.
And Six Horse Jody Trudy.
Whatever.
From Auckland.
From Auckland, Australia.
No, New Zealand.
Whatever.
That's Zoe Bell, the chick who was on the hood in...
yeah, she got exploded.
In Death Proof. Yeah, they shot all the blood out of her. Again, with the geysers of blood. These bullets are tiny little bombs, apparently.
Yes.
All over the place. Not really any sort of flow to this
at all.
To this conversation. So zero. So the movie does start with with everyone getting together. They're in Minnie's haberdashery, and the whole first hour and a half is set up, and then the
why people hate each other.
Why they hate each other. Why half of them are terrible. Because you don't find out who
the other half are until
the
next half of the movie.
What's his name? Tim Roth. Yeah. Delightful Tim Roth.
Yes. Tim Roth is awesome.
But I loved him more than ever in this movie.
But he bleeds out in like every movie.
He's like, every Tarantino movie. It's like, no. Why did I sign up for this again? Him and Madsen and and Senior Bob.
Ah, Senior Bob. Bob was awesome.
Senior Bob, I was playing Silent Night in the corner. Yeah, you don't find out about who they are until the
chapter second. Four.
Right, so, but the first half then does end with, for a moment, over the bond of war, Major Warren, Samuel mm-hmm. Jackson, and General Sanders?
I don't remember that name.
Bruce Stern.
Yes.
They're eating together, kind of bonding a little bit, sort of, because like,
kind of.
They're like, you know, like, we've both been through war. It sucks. Like, you deny me that I was on that battlefield. It's like, I guess we're on that battlefield. and he asks him about his son and all that shit. And then he tells him the story.
Yes.
A crazy fucked up story.
Uh-huh.
You think it was a true story?
Seriously?
Because he lied about the Lincoln letter.
In all reality, I mean, it very well could have been true.
Could have been?
It could have been a half-truth. He very well could have shot his son. Now, whether he made him run naked through the snow and slob on his knob for a very long time, that's a completely different story.
Yeah, dude. And he, like, described it in detail.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, man.
Giant black penis. It's
like, why are... Like, we get it. We get it. He got his dick sucked in the snow.
Yep.
And he didn't even give him a blanket. And then that's what Bruce Stern was like, ah.
Yep.
And he took the bait and he shot him. He killed him. Intermission, which was pretty awesome.
Yes. Yes, it was. But it was, I mean,
I was
it
like,
was.
Oh, shit. Things are popping off.
And right after that is when, you know, the blood hit the fan.
Yeah. So then they come back, start of chapter four. I want to see the movie again, the wide release.
To see if Quentin has his little spiel.
He's definitely, he's going to be in there for sure, because he has a voiceover towards the end.
Yeah.
And he also cameos in all of his own movies, and it's the only way he could work in a cameo for himself. So, at least cameo. He's got a pretty big part, and sizable part in Reservoir Dogs. Mm-hmm. He does say, though, the intermission with the music that brings you back in is 15 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And he says, 15 minutes ago, we left our carriers, blah, blah, blah. Now, in the normal, where there's no intermission, like, that 15 minutes ago doesn't work. So, did he record a whole separate thing? And
I'll tell you.
I want to hear it. I want to find out. I'm going to go see it. Right now. Here we go. I'll be right back after I go see it again. That'd be funny. Then pause, I go see it, come back, unpause
here for a couple hours.
Yeah, you sit here for 3.5 hours. Movie doesn't start for another hour. Sit here for 4 hours. Just like... Then they come back. The guy disposes of the Bruce Stern body. And then he's like, he has them all up against the wall. Mm-hmm. And he knows that Mannix, Walton Goggins, who was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Love Walton Goggins in this. He's like, I know you didn't.
And he's like, you didn't poison it because you were about to drink that cup of coffee when Mr. Russell started peeking blood.
Yeah. And then at that point, I was even thinking too, like, I guess that's true. But what if he did? I don't know.
Well, I mean.
Because at that point, you still don't know, like, what exactly
is
going on.
What
did you know by that point? When he had him up on the wall, was like, which one of you poisoned the coffee? Who did you think was in on it?
I knew that at least one of the people, I knew that Kurt Russell, Obi, Don Mergue, Walton Goggins, and Samuel L. Jackson, that all just kind of was happenstance.
But the other people were there. But we're talking about the three people that were at the haberdashery
when
they showed up.
At least one, if not all of them, could have been involved at that point in time.
So you didn't know.
Yeah, I knew who. Like I said, those. People, I knew it wasn't them. Yeah. Obviously.
But then turns out, spoiler alert, it was all of them.
Mm-hmm. Not just one, not two, all three.
Every single one of them was in on it.
Channing Tatum was waiting underneath the floor to blow off Samuel Jackson's nuts.
Blew off his balls, man, which now makes three movies in a row where Tarantino had a character shoot off another character's fucking junk.
Mm-hmm.
Which now at this point, like, one movie, it's a gag. Two movies, it's interesting. Three movies, we got a weird fetish going on. I was more comfortable with Tarantino when he just like filming ladies' feet.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's like, now I'm shooting my character's nuts off.
That's weird.
Didn't his nuts melt off in Planet Terror?
Perhaps.
What's going on, Tarantino? Weird, like,
maybe he has strange dreams about his nuts.
Maybe he has strange dreams about his nuts being shot off. Dude, I had a dream last night about, for some reason, like, a group of people informed me that I had been elected to be killed by these two Russian dudes at noon. They're gonna kill you.
You were elected to kill?
Well, that they like got together like, and they decided they voted amongst themselves and they were like, one of us has to get killed.
It's gonna be Chris.
And it's gonna be Chris, and it was me, and I was like, no, and I was like fighting them off and shit, and then all of a sudden I was in a house with some people and I was waiting for the invasion, and the invasion almost never came, but then it did come and they started blasting their way through the door, and I was like, no, and then I think I woke up.
Weird.
It was weird.
See, I have that lovely coma sleep.
Oh, I haven't had that in a while.
I haven't had a dream that I've remembered in months.
I need some of that propofol, yo, because that shit, I was weirded out all morning when I woke up. I was like, that's
weird.
I could remember the feeling of angst of imminent death.
Because...
imminent violent death.
Due to Russians.
Shotgun-wielding Russians. Who are going to blow my balls off.
You
like Channing Tatum through a floorboard.
You watch too many action movies.
I guess I do. So... And then we get the whole flashback scene.
Mm-hmm. Where we find Channing Tatum and all his boys rolling up and murdering the fuck out of everybody.
And he's super charming and everything.
And being like, hey, Bruce Dern, we're not going to kill you if you just chill.
Yeah, that was an interesting scene.
Yeah.
It's like it makes it more believable. It's like, I guess it does, yeah.
And then Channing Tatum comes up and gets his head exploded.
Which was...
like, completely exploded.
So hysterical. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. Just a kaboom, gone. When they like, had the entire skull, everything just liquefied all over.
Yeah, he got Roth was in the chair bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
How did he end up dying? Who shot him? Did Mannix end up shooting him? Did he pull out a gun? How did he end up dying? Because then at that time also Madsen was at the table with the gun underneath the table. Yeah. I can't remember how both those guys died specifically.
Well, they got shot, and then Homeboy got shot again. Roth got shot twice while he was bleeding out in the chair.
Yeah, he was sitting in the chair. Again. That was after they killed Jody. Yeah. And she's like, I'm in charge. Like, there are 15 of our gang in Red Rock.
Yeah.
In Red Rock. They'd be coming tomorrow. And then they're like, I think you're lying. So, but Roth got shot again when he was in the chair?
Yeah.
So much happens in the movie. That's why you got to see movies multiple times. You can't remember all the deets. And then Michael Madsen, like, he went for the gun and got shot out. Is that what happened with him?
Yeah, because there was that slow motion where Madsen got shot. And I think Goggins shot Madsen and Roth and then got shot by both of them.
Well, that was the initial. Okay. Gotta see it again. And then it was just down to the three of them? Three little Indians? Definitely 10 little Indians type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a murder mystery. It's a whole group of them, and they start getting whittled down. And he shot the back of Channing Tatum's head.
Come on. Splatter.
All over her face. Yep. She was trying to get the brains out of her
hair.
the only moment in the movie where I felt bad for her in any way whatsoever.
She had brains in her hair.
And she was trying to get out. I was like, that. I guess that does suck.
Yeah.
But she's still a horrible person. They're all horrible people.
Every single one of them.
So that's the thing. When except for Obi.
Yeah.
Because he seemed like a nice guy. I'm sure he had. Yeah. I'm sure he was a kiddie fucker. His backstory is something terrible that we don't know.
I mean, he was just... I mean, as far as we knew, he was just a... he was just a guy who had a carriage.
He was just a damn good driver is what he was. Mm-hmm. Damn good driver. By the middle of the movie, before Samuel L. Jackson tells a story, your only, quote, good characters in the film are the Hangman, John Ruth,
yeah.
Kurt Russell, and Major Warren. John Ruth is still an asshole, though. He's an asshole the whole time, taking people's guns and stuff and them being super paranoid. He was right,
yeah.
But that doesn't excuse his behavior.
I mean, Walter Goggins was an awful person.
Goggins was the worst type of person. He's like these goddamn Oregon militiamen taking over federal buildings and stuff. Like, we fighting lost cause, don't matter.
Uh-huh.
Because this is the right way, goddamn black people. Except he doesn't say black people.
Yep. Samuel Jackson was an awful person.
At the end, though, he does call Samuel Jackson, refers to him as black.
Yeah, as opposed to...
And I was like, character growth.
Yes.
This is what
death.
This is what the movie is about.
Samuel Jackson killed, 47...
Actually, that's the thing. Yeah. So, yeah, he does tell the story about how he burned down, which sounded awesome. That sounds like pretty crazy.
Well, yeah, but he tells it as, there were a bunch of Southerners there, and all I killed was Southerners, and someone was like, oh, no.
Oh, he says, I burned down the prison to get out of there and killed a bunch of Southerners. Walton Goggins is like, actually, he also killed a bunch of Union dudes that went there, too, because you were just trying to save yourself. You didn't care about everyone else. And Samuel Jackson's like, well, that's war.
Yep.
And then Walton Goggins is like... how convenient. You just want to chalk that up to it's war. Well, that's a bunch of bullshit. That's an interesting concept then to introduce into your your bit of entertainment. The idea that even in war, people should be held to a moral standard. I guess they
some
try
sort
to
of
be
moral standard
with the Geneva Convention and stuff like that. But rules of war, the so-called rules of war, which is like
ridiculous.
Yeah, the most oxymoronic thing in the world. War is bullshit, guys. Wage peace, you know, stuff like that. Man, smoke more weed or stuff.
Yeah, but you can't make money waging peace.
You can't make money waging peace. Coca-Cola's trying.
They're trying,
but they're also waging.
But they're not.
They're also waging diabetes
and death.
Yeah, those bastards. So, he tries to talk up the war. Walton Goggins like, no, man, you're a shit heel. And then he finds out, Kurt Russell finds out later that he lied about the Abraham Lincoln letter, that it's a fake. And then shortly after
that.
That made him sad. And then shortly after that, he tells a story about what he did supposedly to the general's son, which very graphically and explicitly includes rape. So by intermission, the only good characters left in the movie are Kurt Russell and your OB.
But you again, know, Kurt again, Russell's not a great person.
Again, Kurt Russell, like I said,
he's a bounty hunter. He can't be the greatest person.
He's a bounty hunter. He's ruthless. He's an asshole and racist. But in that northern, slightly enlightened way, racist, where he's like, "Oh, don't you know?" He says, "Like, don't you know, darkies don't like to be called that word anymore." You call him a fucking darkie, man, and. Like, you're a piece of shit. But he's still the nicest guy. They are the first two to die. I was like, shit, Kurt Russell's dead already?
Already.
Him and that awesome mustache? I would have pegged him to make it closer to the end. Ahead of everyone else. Ahead of fucking Michael Madsen.
I can't believe Walton Goggins lasted as long as he did.
Dude, Walton Goggins ended up being like the man.
He was in most of the movie.
She ain't got nothing to sell. So I'm going to listen to her sales pitch. And then for a second, you're like, oh, shit. But then he's like, nah.
No.
You're hanging. My first and last official act as Sheriff of Red Rock. Which then, that's so, the openly racist guy being named a sheriff.
Well, I mean, dude. Once again, sign of the times.
Which is, again, sign of the times. That shit happens to this day.
Yeah.
To this day, that's what Black Lives Matter is all about. Racist people in the Thorita. Man, oh man. So it ends up being Walton Goggins and Samuel Jackson bleeding out in the bed.
Together.
Having a good laugh over his fake Abraham Lincoln letter. I like when he crumbles it up.
And just throws it.
It's like, you don't need
this. Well, at that point
anymore.
In time, it's already. I mean,
it's like, you don't need it.
It's covered in blood. They're both going to die.
This is done. It's over. This has been a crazy movie.
Yeah.
I am interested in rewatching it to see how the first half holds up, because the first three chapters is a lot of setup.
Yeah.
So knowing where it's going, I would like to see if on a rewatch it's like there's little nuggets that, you know, pop out, little bone mows. I'm like, oh, this is a delight to sit through again. Or we'll be like, oh, I kind of wanted to get to chapter 4 already. You know? Because from chapter 4 on, it's like...
crazy. Well, it's a bloodbath.
Yeah, it's fucking on, man. Damien Bashir gets his head exploded from the inside with a bullet.
Yes.
Damien Bashir played Che in he played Fidel Castro in Che, so Steven Soderbergh's Che, which I saw a roadshow edition that had an overture and an intermission and came with programs.
Hey, apparently Bob likes that kind of shit.
Yeah, or apparently people who do that kind of shit like Bob.
Good job, Bob.
A.K.A. Damian Bashir. Ends with an R. A little bit of Eartha Kitt in there. So it was a pretty crazy movie.
Yeah, it was.
That part where she plays a guitar. And she sings that song.
And then she gets... And then Kurt Russell freaks out and busts the guitar after punching her in the face.
Yeah, because it's all about how like the dude's going to die. And it's while he's drinking the coffee.
Yep.
When he drink that coffee, I was like, oh no, maybe the poison won't work.
Oh no, I just, I knew the poison would work. I just didn't know, how long it would take, and B, that it would be so goddamn bloody.
the
projectile vomit of super thick super red blood.
Yeah, they projectile vomited all of their blood like 4 or 5 times each. And then he got himself shot.
Yeah. And then got his arm hacked off.
Oh, yeah. Because she was trying to get the gun. Hacked his arm off. And then she was on her right. When she got hung, it was
dangling from her wrist.
God damn. Imagine coming across that crime scene. Like, how do I deconstruct this? There's a lady.
You know what? No, I'm just going to turn around and walk the other way.
I'll let the next sheriff handle this one. She had to learn how to play guitar, like in general. She'd never even played a guitar in her life.
Interesting.
And so she had to, it was almost like learning a language phonetically. She just had to like learn the mechanics of playing that guitar to be able to perform it. According to her, Tarantino invited her over to his place to like talk about the role for a makeup test, something very specific. And they ended up not doing that at all. And instead he was just like, listen to the song. And then he played the song for her. He's like, do you know how to play guitar? She's like, no. He's like, all right, I need you to learn how to play guitar and play the song in my movie. She's like,
oh. Okay.
She's like, all right. Whatever you say, boss.
Sure.
And she did it, and it was pretty awesome. You know what people would like? If you go to YouTube, there's this dude, David Poland, who's a box office writer, and you know he does a lot of stuff on moviecitynews.com. He also is, for years now, I think since 2010 at least, if not earlier, he's been getting, because he's a Hollywood insider type dude, and he, you know, he's got all the, you know, all the right axes and everything. He's been interviewing people, actors, producers, writers, composers, anything that has to do with a movie.
He
does his name's David Poland, so he does DP 30, David Poland 30 minutes, and sometimes they're shorter, sometimes they're longer. But it's very, he still does it, and it's very current, very relevant. Actually, if you go to YouTube, I think if you search The Oral History of Hollywood, that's the channel, and it's all there. And he interviewed Tarantino, Samuel Jackson, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and in one interview, two producers that have worked with Tarantino a bunch and both produced. So you're talking about 2 hours of really good...
like behind-the-scenes talk.
Really good interview footage with these people. And the Samuel L. Jackson one, a couple things are slightly spoilery, a little bit sort of like they mentioned I guess you're listening this far, we've already talked about everything. So just go ahead and listen to it, it's pretty dope. And the Tarantino one's really good too. And that's good. That's a good resource out there. That channel in general is fucking,
oh yeah,
it's fucking fantastic. Wow, he interviews almost everyone. It's all there.
Very nice.
Did we miss anything? Can you think of anything?
I mean, probably.
Anything that sticks out to your mind particularly?
I talked about everything that stuck out in my mind.
That you got, yeah. So, The Hateful Eight, pretty cool movie. I'm interested in a couple years seeing how it all shakes out in the pantheon of Tarantino films. Hey, remember, if you haven't listened to it, or maybe you want to re-listen to it, go back to our Crespodiso Film School episode on Quentin Tarantino. That we did a while back. You can go to chriscrespo.com and just search Quentin Tarantino and it'll pop up right near the top. Or if you're, you know, use iTunes or any sort of thing, just scroll back. You'll find it. I guess I can look it up and tell people. You'll fucking find it. If you want to listen, you'll find it. And that's it.
All right.
Drew, where can people find you? Heads.
No, sorry. It was Joker, not Crown.
Damn it. See, wait, no. Joker's heads.
They're both heads.
Oh, they're both heads. So I win.
Sure.
Where can people find you online?
At Antihero419, all over the interwebs.
And tweet me at I am Chris Crespo. Let us know what you thought of The Hateful Eight. And we'll read it on the next show, next episode, in the Vox Populi. This episode is sponsored by Orange Blossom Pilsner and latestfilmtrailers.net. And we're out of here, guys. Hope you enjoyed the show.